Second and 14 at the 33-yard line. Same set. Two tight ends, two receivers. Here's Fred Taylor. Play action. Dropping back to throw. Martin looking down the middle of the field for Keenan McCardell. Makes the grab. There he goes, 30. There's Keenan at the 20. He's at the 10. 5. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Martin and McCardell for 67 and 6 on the scoreboard. Mark back to throw. Pocket collapsing. Steps is being safe. Let's a ball go for Timmy Smith in the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville.
Oh, take that. Take that.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks, all here with you. Jaguars Today on this Tuesday, 2 days away from the start of the NFL season. Jeff, you were just kind of talking about it a moment ago, what it's like on kickoff of opening day. Fred Taylor told us on the postgame show after the last preseason game for the Jags that one of the great things about being a player in game week as opposed to training camp is you actually get to simplify things. You get to cut down how many plays you're really looking at because you're game planning specifically for the Philadelphia Eagles. Did the season, all of a sudden, once you got through training camp, once the preseason was done, what was it like? Sigh of relief on to what we know how to do. What was it like for you?
It was unique in that, you know, you had almost a unique focus in that, you know, the details really became very important. You know, because in training camp, it's more teaching X's and O's. Whereas once you get to the regular season, you're really focusing in on the opponent, tendencies, tips, stances, formations, all of those things that kind of help you gain an edge on game day. Whereas in the preseason, you're teaching Joe Schmo, you know, what his responsibility is on this particular defense and not so much the opponent. So, I mean, it really changes course, and you have to get into that regular season mindset when you're a player where you're really focusing in on the opponent as well as honing why you're doing certain things offensively because of what the characteristics of a defense or characteristics of an offense are.
I've always, not only kind of half kidding with the guys a minute ago, I said everyone thinks they're going to win the Super Bowl kickoff on opening day.
No, but they do.
I was going to ask you, have you been on teams where you looked around and is it always enthusiasm and always looking at the positives before it kicks off, or does sometimes reality set in and you look like, wow, we're going to bat with this?
I don't know if there's many teams in the league that don't have a lot of confidence going into the kickoff weekend. I mean, there were, you know, back here in 1995, obviously, you know, you look around the locker room at that point as a player, you know, having been on some not very good teams in New York, and then I was looking around this locker room in 1995 going, I don't know how we're going to do it.
Right.
You know, I mean, how are we going to win? You know, because you knew that we were lacking in talent, you know, but I mean, most teams in the league, I mean, that year it was certainly an exception with an expansion team here and an expansion team in Carolina. How in the world could they feel that they were going to do well? But I mean, every team in the league feels extremely positive about their outlook this year. But I think that's why, you know, you look at the statistic, and I know it's been in the Jaguars release about the percentage of teams that win on opening weekend, how much greater their chance is to advance into the playoffs at the end of the season. You know, I think it's like 70% or 65% of teams that win on opening weekend end up having a chance of getting into playoffs. And it's almost like the magnification of the first game. Much like the magnification of turnovers in the playoffs. In the playoffs, you want to be perfect. You know, you're like, hey, we have to play really well in order to win, in order to advance. And when you make a mistake, it's a huge letdown. Well, the opening kickoff weekend, if you don't win, it's kind of in the same category. It's a huge letdown overall to where you thought you were going to be, because all offseason, everybody's been talking about how much better you're going to be. You've talked about how much better you're going to be, how the new staff is a breath of fresh air, how the new coach is going to make a difference, how the new players are going to be different. You know, and when it doesn't happen, it's a huge letdown. So, and that's one thing that I like about Gus Bradley is that, you know, he never really focuses on the end result, and that he always focuses on the mantra, just get better.
Right.
You know, because then that way you take away a lot of the anxiety and the pressures of the end result of maybe even game one.
We will get to Philadelphia. We'll get to whether or not you think this team is going to be better. Let's start with dialing it back a couple of days here. Rosters got cut down from 75 to 53. Most of the practice squads come close to being filled up by the end of the weekend here in the National Football League. For the Jags, seemed like a pretty straightforward set of cuts that they were talking about. I think Tanner Doss's injury, the decision to put him on IR, probably made things a little bit simpler. Any surprises in terms of who they let go or who they kept?
No, I think if I'm looking at the defensive side of the ball, I'm a little bit surprised that Jeremy Harris made it. I thought maybe that Jamel Fleming would have an opportunity over him. And certainly that Rashad Reynolds would have made, I think, this roster if he didn't break his hand
right.
over Jeremy Harris. So I think Jeremy Harris really kind of, I don't want to say lucked out, but, you know, got a great opportunity because of the injury to Rashad Reynolds. And then I guess won out somehow over Jamel Fleming. I mean, other than that, defensively, everybody that made this roster is kind of what I expected. Offensively, no surprises. You know, in fact, talked in the game day broadcast multiple times with Frank during the game about how this football team needs to really take a look at finding a tight end. You know, because if you looked at the performance of Marcel Jensen, and the other guy,
Brandon Barden.
Yeah. You know, you just knew that they weren't going to get by with Clay Harbor probably not being available the opening week. And certainly they did that with the signing of Mickey Schuler Jr., who actually played with his dad.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, he was a little long in tooth when I got there, but he was still playing.
He's a good player for a long time.
Really good player, heck of a receiving tight end, and that was back in the day then when an average size tight end was 225 pounds.
Right.
You know, Mercedes Lewis is probably a little bit bigger than most at 270 pounds, but I mean, if you're not 255 pounds now playing tight end, you're not going to get on the field.
Yeah, Mercedes would have been a left tackle in Mickey Schuler Sr.'s day.
You know, it's funny that
Cole
you say
Stewart,
that.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, because our starting center at that time in 1989 was Jim Sweeney. Sweeney was probably 278. Dan Alexander, our starting guard, was probably somewhere around 280. You know, our tackles, Jeff Criswell was a, 280-pound tackle. Reggie McElroy was a little bit bigger than that. He was probably 285, 290. You know, but it's amazing how much the game has changed in height, weight, speed, you know, just since that 1989, 1990 year.
Go back to Jeremy Harris here for a second. How much, if it's, you know, coming down to the final decision between a couple of guys, how much do you think it's every GM's natural reaction to side with the guy I drafted, I spent a pick on? How much
I don't think that really had anything
to
do with it.
No?
I think that this is, they really like Jeremy Harris's size and his length, you know, which really fits Gus Bradley's, you know, style of playing defense, and that they want to continue to give him another year to develop. I think you probably could have put him on practice squad. You know, and I don't think anybody would have snatched him up. I mean, he just, you know, especially after the last game. I mean, he had a missed tackle on a screen play,
right.
And then he got burnt for a long play, and then his special teams play wasn't very good, I thought. It wasn't very physical. You know, so, but I mean, nothing else really surprised me. Especially when you get a couple injuries, that usually kind of makes the decision for general manager with Tandon Doss. If Tandon Doss was able to remain healthy, you know, it might have been a question mark about a Mike Brown. You know, but Mike Brown does so many different things, and I showed that on the, I'm going to show this on Film Room Friday at Jaguars.com this week. Mike Brown actually plays wide receiver, special teams, and will do anything that you ask. In fact, he was the fullback on punt protection and made a tackle. I mean, a wide receiver playing fullback on punt protection? I mean, how often do you see that?
Right.
Never. Never. But the guy, coaches trust a guy like Mike Brown. He's always going to do what you ask. He's always going to do it right. He's probably not going to do it at a high level, but he's going to do it at a good level. And you can just trust him. No matter what you ask him to do. And that's why Mike Brown, a guy like Mike Brown, continues to stick.
Yeah, and for this wide receiver core, I think, you know, he and Cecil Shorts, obviously the only guys with any kind of NFL experience. So
yeah, and that's another big reason. The other guy that I wasn't surprised that they kept, and a lot of people might have been, was Tyler Shatley. Tyler Shatley probably had the best performance of any offensive lineman in the fourth preseason game period. I mean, he was fantastic. You know, and he's a guy that is relatively new to the position, much like Drew Nowak was, and that Shatley, I think, came or went to Clemson and was playing defensive line, made the conversion to offensive line. He's big, he's strong, he plays the game at a physical level, and I think he's got a great opportunity to develop into eventually a starter in this league.
The decision to announce McLennan as the starter at center, surprise after watching the tape, or does that make the right call?
I don't think this is an announcement for the season.
You sure.
I mean, this is really an announcement for week one. And, I give Luke Bowanko a lot of credit for fighting through an injury. I mean, all of a sudden he had the injury at Chicago that, or wasn't even, it was against Tampa, I believe it was. And, he came back and played the next week, which many people didn't expect him to do that. I think when the injury initially happened, I mean, the guy was on crutches and a boot. And all of a sudden he's playing the following week. I think they gave him a lot of credit for doing that. And I think this is probably a sign that, first of all, McLennan is healthy and Luke Bowanko is not quite healthy, even though he fought through it it's maybe an opportunity to get him healthy, to let him to continue to develop, let him see what the regular season preparation is like, because Jock McLennan has been there and done that. You know, and the key words that Gus Bradley said yesterday that you know, I think a lot of people, if you really looked at the script and you were there to hear it, which I was, he said that Luke Pawanko has upside. And upside means that he's going to be eventually in the lineup. It's just a matter of time.
Right, because he's got more room to grow, they feel, than McLennan.
Absolutely.
Does.
But give him a little time to see what it's like playing in the NFL, game planning wise, and then eventually he will be there.
All right. If you want to get in, it's game week for the first time ever on Jaguars Today for a game that actually counts and will care what the score is and where this puts the Jags in the standings after week one. The way to get in today, of course, is 641-1010, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight, looking big picture for the season. Predict the Jags' record and their place of finish in the AFC South. You can share those with us via Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lauren. Or, of course, you can post your thoughts on Facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Jeff Logman's here. Fat Tony's here. I'm Mike Dempsey. We got Lauren Brooks back at 1010XL World Headquarters. We'll take your calls. We'll break down Jags, Eagles coming up right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today, happy game week to you, ladies and gentlemen. 2 days away from kickoff of National Football League style action, 2014 style. Tony, I watched Florida State kind of squeaked by on Saturday night.
Right.
And I thought to myself, that's great. You know, I'm glad they won. They're in first place. If they continue to win, it doesn't really matter what the margin of victory is. They'll make the playoff. When does the NFL get?
Absolutely.
When does the NFL get here, baby? I'm sure Logman, that thought crossed his mind as well, as the UCLA Bruins couldn't cover the 20, but they covered the scoreboard the end of the day.
It's all right. You know, proud of Virginia. They played well.
They did.
Disappointed that Mercedes is going to get 100, but that's all right.
You're
man.
More of a man than I am, brother, because I want that 20. If Vegas says we get 20, I'm getting my 20. You know,
I'm not. First of all, I'm not a gambler.
I know.
Never have been.
I know.
You know, to
you're
me.
You're just supporting the alma mater.
You got to go straight up.
I hear you.
You know.
It would have been that much sweeter because they gave him a game.
Hey, look, Virginia Cavaliers, you know, this is a year that Mike Lennon's got to do something. You know, I mean, Mike Lennon has been struggling a little bit. You know, and you always want to see somebody that's such a good guy do well, because Mike Lennon is highly respected in Charlottesville. I mean, in a big way. People really love him for who he is. And it's not like when you're at Virginia, you have to compete year in and year out for a title.
Right.
You know, every 4 or 5 years, you gotta make a run at it. And Mike Lennon has not made a run at it. And so, he's gotta get something going this year.
You like Brett Hundley, UCLA quarterback?
To be honest with you, Mike, I don't watch enough college football. I mean, I watch so much NFL, you know, between television, film, that by the time that I get in front of the set, you know, if there's a really big college football game, you know, and having a beer with the boys, you know, on the road with the Jaguars, you know, I'll watch a little bit. But I can't sit down and watch a college football game unless it's a big-time game.
So when Tony and I buy our own franchise, then you should be our pro personnel director, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Rather than director of college scouting.
Yeah. I mean, but I love the college game, but how much is too much? You know, I mean, it's, you get overloaded with football. I mean, it's, you know, that's my life, you know, part of my life. You know, and you get too much more than that. You know, okay, you just feel like you just get drained of it. You know, get worn out. So, I mean, but I enjoy the college game, and I appreciate college football fans, because I think it's a great game. You know, and there's always more pride involved, because a lot of people have a connection to the university, you know, a direct connection. And so I get the hype, and I mean, there's probably, like, if I had a choice, you know, in my free time to go watch an NFL game in person, or to go watch a college NFL or college game in person, I would choose a college game in person all day long, just because the pomp and circumstances around it, you know, the college atmosphere, it's tremendous. You know, in fact, when I was growing up, one of my goals in life was to be an athletic director, you know, or athletic administration at the college level, because that's how much love that I have for the college game, but now where I'm at right now, I mean, it's so much football. By the time you're done with that, you're burnt out on having any more.
Do those ADs get to fish as much as you like, too, is
no,
a big question.
That really hindered my my future in that business.
Right, a lot of suit wearing going on
there. Yeah, and that's not, I'd rather wear camo, so.
Understood, and I'm sure a lot of folks in Jacksonville are happy to hear that. We don't want you going anywhere. All right, Jeff, we're going to get to Philly and Jacksonville looking at the tape. But it was, 3 weeks ago when I believe you're the first person to suggest Mike Brewster might not even make this roster.
Yeah.
It could be a start or CLA.
I said that he probably has to make this football team as a starter, and if he doesn't make it as the starter, he's probably not going to be on this roster.
So when you say things like that, I think people in the know to listen to what you have to say. You're pretty tuned into this team, and you watch the film. You're seeing it from the perspective that the coaches are evaluating. Mm-hmm. You're probably not always going to agree with them. Tell us what the latest is you think is happening with this offensive line.
I think it's going to be interesting to who's going to be playing right tackle in Philadelphia, because against the Atlanta Falcons, Cam Bradfield started left because Luke Jokel dressed but didn't play, and then Sam Young played right tackle, started, and played the entire game. I think he was the only player on the roster that played the entire game, as a starter. Sam Young played really well. I mean, really well against the Atlanta Falcons. Cam Bradfield did not play really well against the Atlanta Falcons as the left tackle. So I think there might be a little conversation. I'm just guessing based on what I saw on film and how good that Sam Young played, and Sam Young made this roster, and Sam Young is a vested veteran, which means that Sam Young is guaranteed his salary for the season if he's on the opening day roster. Same thing with Cam Bradfield. But because Sam played so well against the Atlanta Falcons and Cam did not, even though they were on opposite sides of the offensive line, and Austin Pasdor availability obviously is not going to be probably until October at best, I would not be surprised if Sam Young is the starter in Philadelphia. I mean, he's probably more of a right tackle, and that's all he's played all preseason. He's been a right tackle. He does not have swing flexibility. He's not a very good left tackle. He's a right tackle. And he plays right tackle at a pretty good level. And that's a little bit surprising that he made the roster, not because he didn't play well, but because he's a right tackle and a right tackle only, and he's a vested veteran, which is guaranteed a salary. Now, it's not a lot. It's not like he's making $4 million a year. But I would not be surprised if Sam Young is the starter in Philadelphia this Sunday.
Just the mere fact that he made the roster gives you that indication in those that circumstance that you laid out.
He made the roster. He's a vested veteran, and he played exceptionally well against the Atlanta Falcons at right tackle.
When you are grading
and,
Sam Young.
And here, let me add the other thing to this. If Cam Bradfield starts at right tackle in Philadelphia, what happens if you get an injury to Luke Jokel or Cam Bradfield in the game? Okay, if Cam Bradfield's the starting right tackle in Philadelphia and there's an injury to Luke Jokel, God forbid, Cam Bradfield has to go from right tackle to left tackle, and then Sam Young comes into the game. So then Cam Bradfield hasn't had any snaps at left tackle through the week of practice. If Sam Young is the starting right tackle and Luke Jokel is the starting left tackle, and either one of them get hurt, Cam Bradfield during the week can take reps at both sides and then be prepared to play either one. So just a thought. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I would not be surprised.
All right, look for that. Sam Young may, in fact, get the start at right tackle. We'll see if we can dig into that a little bit more as the week goes along.
Let me add this, too, along the offensive line. The guy that I was really high on, and I don't know if you remember me talking about this coming out of the OTAs and minicamp, but the kid that I really liked was Josh Wells. I mean, I really liked Josh Wells, the undrafted rookie from James Madison. Watching his college tape, they always talk about relentless. Luke Butkus always talks about the offensive lineman being relentless. He's the offensive line coach now in Jacksonville with obviously what's happening with George Arno. Josh Wells is the definition of relentless. He finishes plays. He's athletic. He's aggressive. He needs time to develop. But I think the future in Jacksonville as the swing tackle is Josh Wells, because he played right and he played left at James Madison. He's physical enough to play on the right side, and he's athletic enough to play on the left side. This kid has a bright future.
When you are assessing Sam Young, right, what are his strengths and what are his weaknesses?
Consistent, doesn't have great feet, but he's long. He's very long. Not a great puller. you know, as far as athleticism. Cam has more athleticism. But Sam is just consistent, long, and he's got a very good set when he does pass pro. He's not super strong, but he's just consistently good. He's one of those guys that if you had to give him a grade on a scale of 1 to a 10, he's probably a 6.5. You know, whereas, you know, Luke Jokel, athletically, he's probably a 9. Performance, he's probably only a 7 in preseason. So you want to see Luke Jokel make progress. But Sam Young is a 6.5, and he's going to be in a 6.5 on every day that you play him. You know, there's no worry about consistency playing and play out on Sam Young.
So he plays to his talent level.
He reaches his talent level, and he's not super talented, but he's a good, solid player.
All right. Since we're talking about offensive line. All right, Philly used to be known with that Jim Johnson blitz package and everything that they would bring with Andy Reid as the head coach. What are you seeing on film from Chip Kelly's Eagles defense?
Well, it's Bill Davis's defense now. This has nothing to do with Chip Kelly. This is Bill Davis, and Bill Davis is highly respected defensive coordinator in the league. And you look at the coaching staff, and you know when I do my game boards, I always do the coaches first just to get an idea of the flavor. You know, if you look at some of these coaches, first of all, I'm impressed that they have a lot of former players on their coaching staff with Philadelphia. Trey Thomas, the former tackle. Deuce Staley, former running back for the Eagles. And on defense, Todd Light, former Notre Dame guy that played in the league. You know, so I really like the fact that Chip Kelly's got some former players on his roster. But Jerry Azzanaro, assistant head coach, defensive line coach, an excellent, excellent guy. Mike Dawson, assistant defensive line coach. I mean, this is a very good defensive staff. And the highlight is really Bill Davis. I mean, he's an excellent coach. They play a straight 3-4, and they do a little bit of mix-up. For the most part, it's a straight 3-4. It's not an ultra-talented defense. It's a very good defense. A little bit long in tooth in some areas, you know, because Trent Cole is a guy that's been around for a while, but he's still got it. He still got it. Fletcher Cox is a heck of a player. If he were a 3 technique and a 4-3, he'd probably be rated higher than what he is as a player, but he's a guy that has ultra strength, and it's going to be a great matchup for Zane Beatles and Luke Jokel because that's where he's going to be at for the most part. Cedric Thornton is a solid player, probably better than average. The guy that I'm not overly impressed with is Connor Barwin, but he's a guy that gives you great effort every time. I mean, holy cow, D'Amico Ryans in the middle is solid. The guy that really kind of wows you a little bit at times is Michael Kendricks, the other inside linebacker. Got great speed. I know he had his knee taped up against Pittsburgh. He looked to be fine even though he taped it up. Corners are okay. The safeties are okay, but they made a nice addition in the secondary with Malcolm Jenkins, who played for the New Orleans Saints, I believe. Mm-hmm. So good, solid defense, but nothing outstanding. But they got the ability to bring some heat.
Where do you think the Jags have the best chance to have success, just based on what you know they want to do and what they want to try to employ against this defense?
Well, I think it's going to be this is a tough matchup for the Jaguars going to Philadelphia. And the reason I say that is that offense that Chip Kelly runs, I mean, they're precise. I mean, exceptionally precise, and they stress linebackers. They stress linebackers because, you know, all that read option stuff, first of all, when you have, and I guess it's called the read option. In reality, it's all it is zone, inside zone, outside zone, and then play passes off of it. But they always have the threat of the quarterback as keeping the ball. And that's really the fundamental factor of a Chip Kelly offense. Even though Nick Foles is not a threat to run.
Right.
But you still have to honor that somewhat. So you have one of the best running backs in the league, if not the best running backs in the league in LeSean McCoy. Darren Sproles, who is not a young man anymore, but he's still got ultra talent. And you got a quarterback who's very efficient, then that is a threat to run somewhat. And so it stresses the linebackers because when the ball is snapped and Nick Foles sticks the ball into the stomach of LeSean McCoy, you respect that. But then you also have to honor the fact that Nick Foles could keep the ball. But then you also have the third factor in that, and that he could throw the ball. And that's why this offense is so difficult. It stresses the linebackers because the linebackers, do we, you know, read LeSean McCoy? Do we read Nick Foles? Or do we read Brent Celek, the tight end, leaking in behind us? That's the biggest challenge of this offense. It's extremely stressful for the linebackers.
When you look at Nick Foles, like you said, he's not, you know, he's not Mike Vick playing in that offense, right? So
if Mike Vick were in his heyday, this is the perfect offense
Taylor
for Michael. Absolutely.
So if you are Jeff Logman, defensive coordinator, and you got to pick your poison here, you kind of say, you know what? we're going to give him that Nick Foles read until he proves to us that he's going to hurt us.
I'm going to ignore Nick Foles.
Right.
I'm
just ignore him, right? You're going to play McCoy, and then you're going to be somewhat concerned with Celek or Zach Ertz coming over the top.
Absolutely. And if Nick Foles keeps it,
God bless him.
You better slide, buddy.
Right.
You better slide.
Jeff Logman's here with us, so we'll continue to talk Jags, Eagles, game week. Loggy's had a look at the tape, and how about that one? Maybe keep an eye out for Sam Young starting at right tackle. If that, in fact, becomes the case, it won't be the last thing you hear here first, courtesy of Jeff Logman. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we are coming up on its start of the NFL season. We got Jeff Logan, we got Fat Tony on Mike Dempsey's Jaguars today, and got a new photo contest for the week, trying to give away a pair of tickets. We will succeed in doing it, by the way. It's not that difficult to try, Tony, but we are gathering finalists for our Foundation Professionals of Florida photo contest. This week's theme, and probably for the next couple weeks, and then we'll choose a winner leading up to the game against the Colts. Tickets are for the home opener against Indy. Simply my Jaguar family, whether that's your kids, your parents, the people you hang out with on game day, whatever you consider that to be, post your favorite photo that fits the theme, my Jaguar family, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. They'll give you the peace of mind that your home's foundation is safe, much as they realize fans are the foundation of the organization. They know your home needs a solid foundation as well. They'll work with your insurance company. Financing is available, and, of course, licensed and insured Foundation Professionals of Florida. Call them at 287-2690 or visit them online at foundationprosfl.com. All right, Jeff Logman's here. Talking about the Jags and the Philadelphia Eagles as it is game week. Jeff's taking a look at all the tape. If you are the Jags defense, how much nickel are you playing? I mean, are you
pretty much all nickel.
Going to start in nickel?
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles don't have a true fullback, and they've got some talented tight ends with Celek and Ertz. But, you know, they're mostly a three-wide receiver set. You know, so Telvin Smith is going to have one heck of an introduction to the NFL.
How does it work? If you are facing Philadelphia and you're in nickel, okay, who's responsible for LeSean McCoy on passing plays?
The Mike and Will. Typically, if they're playing any kind of man, which would be Posluszny and Telvin Smith.
So who covers the tight end? If it's three wides, a tight end and McCoy.
Usually Cyprian. There.
Okay, so Cyprian will have the tight end, and likely Telvin will, you would think, because of the speed, maybe, shadows LeSean McCoy?
Well, usually that's formation-based and what side, you know, based on the rules of the defense, which side that LeSean McCoy goes to. You know, typically a Mike and a Will in a nickel situation, the nickel back replaces the auto, and then he's walked out on a slot receiver, and so then you have the two remaining linebackers in the middle, which are the Mike and the Will. So the Jaguars starting Mike and Will are Posluszny and Telvin Smith in the nickel package.
Sure.
And they're balanced. One guy's on one side, one guy's on the other side. And so whichever side that Sean McCoy ends up releasing to typically is where that coverage is based on in man. You know, a zone coverage, you know, I mean, wherever he ends up is whichever is going to be covering. It could be a corner on LeSean McCoy. So it could be either one. I'd love to have Telvin Smith on him just because, I mean, Telvin Smith runs a 4.39 40. You know, and I would not hesitate or lose confidence that if Posluszny were covering LeSean McCoy, but I think Telvin Smith's speed will help him out much greater than what Paz has.
And that goes right into what I was going to ask you next. If you're Philadelphia and you're trying to isolate one of these guys, do you try to stay away from the speed of Telvin Smith or away from the veteran savvy, I guess you could say, of Paul Posluszny? This is Telvin Smith's first game in the league. As athletic as he is, do you feel like I can take more advantage of him because he's raw?
I think if you're Chip Kelly, you're just going to run the offense and you're not so much worried about a matchup because, I mean, you have confidence in LeSean McCoy against anybody. You know, it doesn't matter. And for that matter, Darren Sproles, I mean, holy cow. I expect to see...
No, they'll both be on the field plenty.
I expect to see both of those guys on the field at the same time. They did a little bit of that against Pittsburgh, but not much. And I guarantee you that they have an entire package with those two guys on the field at the same time because it presents great matchup opportunities. I mean, if you can get Darren Sproles in space with, you know, the coverage of Telvin Smith on him, and if you're a coach and you got a matchup with Darren Sproles, you know, a 30-year-old running back that's been around the league and is, first of all, he's unbelievably quick. against a rookie, you're jumping up and down saying, oh, yeah. Or if you've got LeSean McCoy against anybody, you know, and for that matter, Paul Posluszny, you're excited about it because LeSean McCoy is best running back in the league. You know, so as an offensive coordinator, take either one. Either one.
You said on the break you thought Nick Foles played okay in the preseason. Maybe not a great game one. We threw a couple of picks. I think which was magnified by the fact he only threw two last year against 27 touchdowns. So when he threw a couple in a preseason game,
marvelous year.
Everyone said, oh, you know, this guy is reverting back to what he will be. And, you know, he's not going to be 27-2 probably ever again in his career. But what have you seen from him on film?
Real solid, very efficient, good decision-making. You know, the one thing that I think they definitely miss is DeSean Jackson. And the reason I say that, they really don't have anybody that threatens the top of the defense. And, you know, Chip Kelly's offense is about, you know, utilizing the entire field and stressing the defense over the entire field. Well, who's that guy that can run deep for the Philadelphia Eagles? They really don't have a guy. You know, so that hurts the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I know they've got a draft pick that they're kind of excited about. At the wide receiver position, Jeremy Maclin is back from the ACL reconstruction. Riley Cooper is a, you know, big solid possession receiver, you know, but they just don't have anybody that can take the top off of that defense. You know, so that's good. I mean, that's good if you're the Jaguars because you're not sitting there going, oh man, we got to worry about where, you know, DeSean Jackson is lined up because he can burn us deep and there's a home run threat every time he touches the ball.
Pace of play is a big issue with them, but the Jags, Tony, were the Jags second last season in terms of snaps, offensive snaps per game,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, should the Jags be as acclimated as anybody to seeing this pace of play because what they try to simulate in practice?
They should be. I mean, they should be because of the offense that they run and the amount of two-minute drill that they run in practice. I mean, the Jaguars probably run just maybe more two-minute work in practice than anybody.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, I mean, typically it's a game-changing moment. You know, end of the half and at the end of the game, I mean, you're typically, if you're running a two-minute drill, you're going for the victory. You know, so, I mean, that's a critical part of the game. And it's a critical part of the game because you run an up-tempo, no-huddle offense anyway. So, you, I mean, that's just a part of what you do. So, you know, I expect the Jaguars to be very ready, probably as much as, maybe better than any team in the National Football League at facing Philadelphia in week one with that tempo, which, Brian Sexton was telling me yesterday, and I got the numbers here if you'll bear with me for a minute, but he gave me the numbers because, you know, the NFL didn't keep records about pace of play offensively until, I don't know, I think it was like the late 90s, maybe something like that. And the Philadelphia Eagles are the fastest in recorded history since it's been kept, and it's 23.38 seconds between plays. You know, and I like to say that I came up with that, but Brian gave that to me. I mean, that's unbelievably
fast. Nice job, Brian
Sexton.
Fast.
Unbelievably fast. I mean, that's... You know, so
that's half the play clock, basically.
Well, you know, and if the thing you worry about is rotating defensive linemen, you know, can you do it? You know, and with the Jaguars, when they run their up-tempo offense, typically their offense is predicated if they have a successful first down play, then they run to the no huddle and get in on the line of scrimmage for play number two. The Philadelphia Eagles, I don't know if they have that same kind of approach, but if you can have success on first down, it's going to give you more opportunities to slow down that tempo of the Eagles' offense. But that's not easy to do.
If you have success on first down defensively?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And make them think about down distance a little bit more, and maybe they're just not racing up to. What about offensively? I mean, do you try, if you feel like this is what you do, and you want to play up tempo, even if you're coming up against a team that maybe is a little bit more advanced in that degree in terms of, you know, the quickest getting off the snap since they've recorded this, do you try to maybe, you know, still play tempo, get them up to the line, but maybe bleed a little clock at the line of scrimmage? Does that depend on how the game's going?
Because if you had that philosophy last year when the Jaguars were really struggling as a team, would have scaled back the tempo. You know, and I thought last year was kind of a mistake that they ran that much up-tempo offensively just because you just weren't that good of a team to put your, you know, defensively to put them back out on the field. You know, and so I don't expect them to scale back their tempo just because Philadelphia is running up-tempo. This may be one of the games in the National Football League that could approach a record for number of plays in a game if the score is close, you know, whether whoever wins. But if the score is close, this could be 70, 75 plays per side of the ball, and that's a lot of plays.
That is a lot of plays. If you're looking at the Jags running the football against Philadelphia, what have you seen from the Eagles defense on the film in terms of stopping the run so far this
season?
Well,
the real key to running the ball against a 3-4 defense has always been blocking the nose tackle. I don't think Benny Logan is a great player for the Philadelphia Eagles, so I think you can get some things done there. I think Jock McClendon is strong enough to be able to block a Benny Logan, you know, create some opportunities. So if you can block that nose tackle, get Toby Gerhart, you know, downhill with a little bit of a head start, you know, I think that you can really have success in first down stresses Philadelphia defense. To me, that's the key. How good is Toby Gerhart going to be on first down?
Who will get the second most amount of touches out of that running back crew, would you
Todman.
Guess? You think so?
Yeah. And I know that during our broadcast last week, Pacelli was raving about Denard Robinson. And look, I'm excited about Denard Robinson. I mean, that guy probably made more progress than anybody from year one to year two. I mean, catching the ball, you know, averaging over 4 yards a carry as a running back. But Jordan Todman has something. He's got the ability to hit the hole with speed. He's been there and he's done that. And he's a physical runner. You know, Denard is not a physical runner. You know, I think Denard is a guy that they're going to try to maybe get out in space. You know, toss plays. You know, he's not an inside the tackles type consistent runner yet, but he's kind of slippery. But I think Jordan Todman, but I think we're going to see all three guys. I think we'll see all three guys. Storm Johnson, you know, with the ankle, didn't practice, I think, yesterday. Not that it was a full-scale practice. But Storm Johnson will probably be a guy that will be inactive for quite some time in the season.
Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. Allen Robinson looks like he'll be back in some capacity. At least that's the way he's talking this week. Limited in practice, but to how close do you think we're seeing him to return to, if not full reps, full health?
How do you know? I mean, really, how do you know? I mean, you haven't seen him for almost all of training camp. OTAs, he was sidelined after going up for that one ball and hurting his hamstring. You know, I've got concerns, you know, with him about, you know, how productive, how successful he can be for this season.
Even if he's healthy, like, from this point on, like, if by week two he feels as good as he's going to feel.
Even if he's 100% right now, you know, and he has no issues going forward, that's a lot to ask of a rookie to come in and be a contributor. I mean, how many top 10 pick wide receivers have you seen ever in the National Football League make an instant impact?
Sure.
Or be a instant contributor on offense? And then you add in that he hasn't had any practice, you know, and he's starting to practice now. He's got 16, 17 weeks really to kind of contribute. It's a lot to ask of a young player. But, I mean, he's clearly got physical talent.
If you're looking to get an impact out of him early in the season, are you trying to maybe limit him to some red zone packages, something, you know, when you're down inside the 10-yard line, give yourself another big target to stress the defense?
Well, I think they'll have plays that, you know, he is a primary target. But, you know, if he's a package-type player, I mean, what else is he going to do? I mean, you're only allowed to have 47 on game day. You know, so that's going to be an interesting, you know, to follow how they use him and in what capacity. Because, I mean, if you're a package-type wide receiver, typically you're playing on special teams. I mean, you got to contribute, you know. And have you seen him do any special teams?
Well, I haven't seen him do anything,
you know.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know.
Because that body size doesn't strike me anyway as that too many guys that are built like him play special teams.
I will tell you the one play that he is exceptional at, and that's the quick screen, to where you've got two wide receivers out, and he's one of the two on either side. And it's where the quarterback just takes the ball, turns, and throws it to the wide receiver, and he needs one block to get a crease. You know, watching the college tape, and I said this back in the springtime, if you compared Sammy Watkins and Allen Robinson on the quick screens, Allen Robinson is far, far superior than Sammy Watkins at the quick screen. He's got a great ability once he catches the ball, planting his foot, and getting vertical in a hurry. and he's got the size to run through some of the arm tackles that typically happen over there in that particular area. It's way better than Sammy Watkins. He's much better at it than Marquise Lee, so I would not be surprised if that's a play that they will dial up as part of the package for Allen Robinson.
Jaguars today rolling on here live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. When we return, we'll take a look at this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and a lot more with Loggy. If you want to get on board, 641-1010, the way to do it. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. It was on this date, September 2nd. September's here, by the way, in case you haven't noticed.
Wow.
Doesn't feel like it.
Football, I know. Football's upon us. This date in 1966, the Miami Dolphins played their first regular season game ever in franchise history. I'm happy to report they lost that game to the Oakland Raiders, 23-14. Also this date in 1998, Jerry Rice, then with San Fran, of course he wrapped up with Oakland, signed a six-year contract for $36 million. The deal made him the highest-paid wide receiver in the league. The times are a-changing. What did J.J. Watt reportedly got like $50 million guaranteed in his new deal?
$50 million after year two. 51.68, yeah. I think is what he was.
That will work.
he's worth every penny.
Oh, he's a beast, man. And he's what, 24 greatest, years old?
He's the greatest defensive player in this era. He's
this
fantastic.
Era. Going back to where? How far would you have to go back to come up with a better? Ray Lewis in his prime or maybe not even?
No, yeah, I mean, that's probably Ray. I mean, when Ray was in his prime, I mean, extremely dominant player. But, I mean, J.J. Watt, I mean, he makes coaches game plan. I don't know if I don't have HBO, so I didn't end up watching Hard Knocks. Mm-hmm. But I was over there with Patrick Kavanaugh and Dave DeCandis, and they pulled up the clip from Hard Knocks with Mike Tyson, Jake Matthews, and Bruce Matthews. Bruce Matthews, his dad, was at Falcons training camp, and they were filming J.J. Watt coming down the steps to the practice field, and we're showing, and Mike Tice, I think, said it perfectly, and he says, the guy's a freak. You know, he said, he was telling Jake Matthews, he said, look, you're not going to see a guy like this every week. You know, he said, this is a very rare athlete. And it's the truth. I mean, a guy, I would pay whatever a ticket cost to me is worth to watch J.J. Watt. I mean, when I watch film, of the Houston Texans, I have to watch it twice because I watch J.J. Watt on every play, and then I have to go back again and watch the film. And there's very few guys that I have ever done that with since 1989, and he is one of them.
J.J. Watt says he wants to be the first 20-20-20 guy this year. 20 sacks, 20 tackles for loss, which you get a tackle for loss every sack you get. So if you get the 20 sacks, you got that covered.
You're there, buddy.
Right. But also 20 passes defensed. He's got a knack for batting the ball at the line of scrimmage, which would be an obscene amount of tipped balls at the line of scrimmage. So we'll see if he's able to do it. This date, also some Hall of Fame birthdays. 1948, Terry Bradshaw, sometimes a country singer, often a quarterback as well for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he was born on this date in 1948. Eric Dickerson was born on this date in 1960.
I got a good story about him.
Well, hold that for one sec. Do you know who the only MVP of the XFL was? 1 year they existed. Who won the MVP?
I have no idea.
Tommy Maddox, right. Baby. Born on this date in 1971.
Oh, yeah, because Pittsburgh signed him right after that.
They did. Yeah. He had a great season with them. And
you knew it was Tommy Maddox or he hate me.
Career.
It was one or the other.
Right, it's Rod Smart. I could have been Tom McManus. Tom McManus had a what do you have? Would we describe it as a cup of coffee? A tryout?
Yeah.
I think he flew. Was it L.A. he wanted to go?
Actually, he ran a 5.4 40. They
might
said,
have been
well,
that. McManus said he went out there for one day. He turned around and came right back. Yeah, enough of that. This date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or maybe you are in the market for Invisalign, the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard, they've got it all. 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of their comprehensive care services. Hold that thought on Eric Dickerson. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
A couple players got new contracts over the course of the holiday weekend. We were just discussing J.J. Watt. He had 2 years remaining on his rookie deal, but he and the team have agreed in principle to a six-year extension that could be worth up to $100 million and includes a $51.876 million guaranteed after next year, according to John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. That is the most guaranteed money ever given to a defensive player. The Kansas City Chiefs and quarterback Alex Smith, whom they traded for last offseason, have also agreed to a contract extension. Smith was entering the final year of his contract, but he and the Chiefs have reportedly agreed to a 5-year, $75.5 million contract extension with $45 million guaranteed, assuming he is healthy next March. If not, then that guaranteed number drops all the way to $30 million. Poor Alex Smith. That's a little over $15 million a year for Alex. Remember that discussion we were having last week about when was the last time that no drafted quarterback started week one of their rookie season? Well, 2014 will not be included in that discussion, as the Oakland Raiders this weekend announced that Derek Carr, their second round pick, will be their starter week one when the team plays the New York Jets. To me, that probably says more about Matt Schaub than it does Derek Carr. And finally, sticking with quarterback news, the Houston Texans acquired quarterback Ryan Mallett via trade with the New England Patriots, a conditional seventh round pick that could turn into a sixth.
If I'm betting, Ryan Mallett starts at some point this season for the Houston Texans. Otherwise, really, why go out there and try to acquire that guy when he's becoming a free agent off the end of his rookie contract after this year? Alex Smith, Jeff, do you think were the Chiefs in a position where they basically had to sign this guy? I mean, if you find a guy, if your team is competitive as the Chiefs were last year, and you find a guy who maybe isn't the best but certainly isn't among the worst quarterbacks in the league and helped put 44 points up on the board in the playoff loss last year. The defense collapsed.
He played well in the playoffs.
Right.
Too,
he played well. And he has played well going back to San Fran the last few years, and San Fran played well in the postseason as well. I mean, did they get a bargain on Alex Smith? It's just the cost of doing business. What do you think about that?
I don't think a bargain. I mean, they gave up 2 second round picks for him, you know, so that wouldn't classify as a bargain. But, you know, I mean, he's not an elite quarterback. He'll never be an elite quarterback, but he's going to be a really good quarterback. And if you have a really good quarterback, then you got to build around that really good quarterback and be good in other areas. And I think that contract enables them to be able to build around Alex Smith financially to still have those resources to do that. You know, so I'm okay with the Kansas City Chiefs doing that. I think it was smart by them and that he's consistent. They've got an elite running back. They've got some elite players on defense, and now they can focus in on building the best possible team around Alex Smith. And then they can compete for a Super Bowl. Now, are they going to be year in and year out a consistent, you know, contender? No, not with an Alex Smith, but they will be if they can build around Alex Smith.
I think for them, questions on the offensive line, they've shuffled around a lot of pieces, including losing.
Well, they made a mistake last year now.
Drafting Eric Fisher.
Oh, yeah. I said it. And I said, after it happened, I said, they just screwed up. You know, and to me, who's the general manager there that went there with Andy Reid?
Scott Pioli.
No?
No. Oh, no, that's right.
Pioli's the
previous
one.
I
don't remember his name.
Can't think
John Dorsey, maybe?
Might be.
Something like that.
He should
be fired. I mean, you can watch Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel coming out of college and make that. I mean, wasn't hard. I mean, Eric Fisher?
Chiefs GM.
Really?
Google search. John Dorsey.
Yeah.
Nice call.
So I was right.
Nice pull there. Give us your Eric Dickerson story.
I was a rookie, and I remember watching film leading up. We were getting ready to play the Indianapolis Colts. This was when he was with Indy. And, you know, division opponent. And he reminded me a lot of Chris Warren. Kind of opposite, I guess you could say. But, I mean, I got a chance to watch Chris Warren at Virginia when he was a freshman. And we actually started him at cornerback, and then eventually, of course, he went on to play for the Seattle Seahawks, running back, Furman, a whole 9 yards. And I remember watching Chris run at college, and I used to think, man, I'd love to have a shot at Chris because he ran upright. And so watching the film of Eric Dickerson, I said, I can't wait to get a shot at Eric Dickerson because he runs so upright, I'm going to crush him. You know, typical rookie arrogance. So we're playing the Indianapolis Colts at home. And the Colts are driving into the eastern end zone of the Meadowlands. And it was a goal line play. They're on like the 3 or the 4 yard line. And they just run a straight lead play. And I was the outside linebacker, the right outside linebacker for the Jets my rookie year. And I come down the line of scrimmage unblocked 100 miles an hour. And all I had was visions of the crowd going, ooh, when I blew them up. and I hit him as hard as I could. And when the fog cleared, the sound that I heard was not an ooh, it was a dead silence, because Eric Dickerson completely ran through me like I wasn't even there, and he walks into the end zone for a touchdown. And it took me like 10 minutes. That was probably a concussion. I you probably qualify
as a concussion. Ding, Tony. Just had his bell rung.
And I said to myself at that point, I was like, wow, I guess it ain't so easy at this level.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Dickerson, one of the all-time greats, but I think just a casual observer watching him thought of him as more of a finesse guy, right?
He was not finesse.
He wore
he
every
looked,
pad.
He looked finesse.
He looked finesse. He wore every pad in the book. I always thought it, you know, even that stupid neck roll that, that I don't think ever saved anybody's neck once. If it was available to Eric Dickerson, he would wear, you know, the elbow pads, every inch of it, the goggles, the whole nine yards. And I think, he, you know, for the most part, I'm sure nobody escapes completely unscathed. He came through pretty good. You know, we tend to see him every year, but welcome to the NFL, kid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got probably the first welcome to the NFL that I got was playing Indianapolis, and I don't remember if it was the same game or not. It might have been. But the Colts had a left tackle, Chris Hinton, who they acquired, I believe, from the Falcons. Great left tackle. And rookie season, I remember he blocked me down the field a couple different times, like 10 yards down the field, and I was like, oh, my God, do I belong here? You know, the rookie is a pretty steep learning curve, you know, for that first year in the National Football League. And I just remember him blocking me, and I was like, oh, my God, he's so big and strong and athletic. You know, you don't see that in college. You just don't.
It's like when Logman walks into the radio studio, Tony, and he starts talking football. We all look at each other like, do we really belong here? Are we just here to facilitate? Because,
We have him here. We learn.
I am, as many people on Twitter have expressed that today, I learn every time Logman comes on. We like to take you to class with Jeff Logman every Tuesday. When we return in a moment, Jeff's going to tell us, what he thinks one of the biggest differences is in today in preparing for your opening game opponent than when he played, and just how it may work to the advantage of the Jags and the Eagles in this contest. So that's coming up. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Glad you're along in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
She doesn't own a dress. Her hair is always a mess. If a cat is stealing, she won't confess.
All right, here we go. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman here with you in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. And, Jeff, got a guy who's going to spend a lot of time as a focal point, I think, of the Jaguars in the secondary, especially with Philadelphia wanting to run a lot of up-tempo offense at him in week one. Dwayne Grotz joining us here, man, going into your second year. How's the offseason been for you?
It's been going well. Yeah, I did a good job with improving on all the small things that I might not have been doing last year. And I think I took advantage of this offseason.
What did you feel like you needed to work on the most coming out of your rookie year?
Oh, wait a minute. First of all, let's go ahead and just put it out there on the table. Grotzy's anal now. I mean, I was talking to D-Walk now, Dwayne Walker, your defensive backs coach, and he will tell you that you're very anal about your technique, your footwork, and all of that. You are a technician.
Yeah, definitely, because your talent is only going to take you, but so far, you need to stay on top of your techniques and fundamentals to put you in the best position to make plays. So, I pride myself on that.
I'll take your word for the technique. He's the technique guy in the room. I'm a big picture guy, Dwayne. but for you, I mean, what surprised you? Everybody says the speed when you come into the league is the first thing that you notice. For you, you know, just your rookie season, what were the biggest impressions that were made on you?
Biggest impressions?
Just like in terms of making your transition from college or some of the opponents you may have gone up against.
Well, every receiver that I'm going to go against this year or any year, you know, they're talented players. And, you know, that I can't put anyone on a pedestal and go out there with that type of mindset. You know, I'm in the league too. So, you know, that's the biggest picture. So I just go out there and do what I have to do and focus on myself and, you know, hopefully put myself in the best position, like I said, to make plays. So I don't think my opponent really matters.
You guys had a great opportunity in the preseason. I mean, if you look from preseason game two to where you faced, what was it, the Chicago Bears and then the Detroit Lions and then the last game against the Falcons. Obviously, you didn't get to see Julio Jones or Roddy White, but I mean, that preseason game two and three, the size and the level of the wide receivers that you guys faced, that has to feel good because you get work against some of the best.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. It's always good when you had the opportunity to go against those really, you know, those top receivers in the league. And, yeah, going against those type of receivers, is, it helps me because now I got that experience. Now I know what I have to do or, you know, improve while going against those receivers. But yeah, it definitely helped me because this year I'm a go against a few more big receivers. So yeah, it definitely helped me.
Who's the best wide receiver that you faced yet that has impressed you the most?
That impressed me. I have to say Gordon.
Josh Gordon.
Josh Gordon, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, from Cleveland. Yeah, that was a good game, to say the least. He's gonna be a good player.
Gonna be?
He is. Yeah.
See him next year, but at this point in time, other than obviously, you know, having some experience watching the film, I got to imagine the thing that helps you the most, having some fresh bodies up front, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that front four, if they can get after it a little bit and you bring in some guys with some Hall of Fame or some championship credentials, that's got to help you a little bit back there.
Yeah, definitely. Last year, we met a few players in the back end last year, and you know, just the improvement on the defensive line is going to help us, you know, further that and make more plays in the back end. So, yeah, it only helps us out.
Last year was such a crazy year for you guys. I mean, holy cow, you got you and Demetrius McCray and Jeremy Harris. I mean, everybody's so raw. Jonathan Cyprian. Now you're in year two. You know, you guys are growing together. You got one veteran in the group and, well, actually two, Alan Ball and Will Blackman. But you can really tell that in training camp and then during the games, you guys are really starting to gel and gain confidence as a group. Well, how different is that this year compared to last year where a lot of guys are wide-eyed?
It's a big difference because last year it was a totally different situation. You know, we all were new to Jacksonville, and you know, we're getting acquainted to the coaches, to the playbook and everything, and try to figure each other out. But now this year, you know, now we know each other, we know what we have to do, and you know, having that vision, you know, helped us out and helped us gel together, and now I think it's going to be a big difference in our play.
Because you know, that's the big transition that I remember, is that, you know, in the first year you're so worried about what you have to do.
Yeah.
Whereas now in year two, okay, I know what I'm supposed to do, and now I can spend that extra hour a day of watching the opponent to watch his subtleties, to maybe get tips on where he's going to run or route combinations.
Definitely.
And less on what I'm supposed to do. That's the biggest jump, I think, year mm-hmm. one to year two, which you're undertaking right now.
Yes, yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, me and D-Walk sat down and talked about this. We had a long conversation about it because I know the expectations on me is going to be a lot bigger this year. And, you know, we were just talking about, you know, the steps and the process it would take to become the player that I want to be. And, you know, that was part of it, you know, doing all the little stuff as far as the film goes, watching the right things, trying to pick up on, you know, a few tips and trying to just help myself create a few more plays. And, yeah, I think it's going to help out this year.
Jaguar cornerback Dwayne Grotz here in the Garber Auto Mall hot seat with us on Jaguars today. Dwayne, we got some guys like Sendarek Marks and Telvin Smith. They come in here and they're pretty, you know, big personalities.
Yeah.
You see it out on the practice field. They got a big personality as well. You seem pretty chill. I see you out on the practice field. You're anything but.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, do you feel like, you know, when you put the pads on, like, is there some kind of transformation or that, you know, you just feel like your other personality's unleashed a little bit? Cause you're a guy who likes to talk a little bit after you make a play.
yeah. You won't catch me talking too much if we're just around, you know, just, you know, chilling, relaxing. But, on the field is a totally different thing. You know, it's just, it's different when you put on that helmet, you know. You can't beat that feeling. And yeah, I do like to talk a little bit on the field, and you know, it just creates energy for the team. And I think, you know, everyone builds off it and just takes the energy and run with it. So, I mean, it helps me and it helps the team, I think.
And your position, too, cornerback. I mean, the proverbial island that you're out there. You know if you got beat, I mean, immediately on the play. So you got to have that kind of cockiness, that little edge to you, don't you?
You got to have a little confidence out there playing. Because as you said, yeah, you make one mistake and everyone sees it. So I love it, though. I love being on the island. It's something about it. It's just, you know, just knowing that you have to be on your A game every play and kind of like just creating plays too. It's a beautiful thing.
Who growing up? You know, I remember growing up. I mean, Jack Lambert was a guy that I used to just love to watch. Jack Lambert. That's the position I played in college. And so I used to kind of model my game after him a little bit. Obviously, I
got better teeth.
Jack Lambert. My teeth are better. But growing up, who did you watch?
Darrell Revis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like the style of play. And he's a technician, too. He has the talent, but as I said, yeah, just being on top of your techniques and fundamentals puts you, you know, way further.
Let's flip over to the other side of the ball because, you know, you got to see firsthand Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson a little bit.
Yeah.
Hearns. Give us your take on those three guys.
I like them going into the season. Yeah, I think they're going to do big things for us.
Which one? Start with one. If you had to pick one trait that each of them have, Allen Hearns, first thing that comes to your mind?
Physical.
Okay. Marquise Lee?
Quick.
Okay. Allen Robinson?
Ball hawk.
Yeah,
and see that's it's unique. I mean, each guy, you know, has a trait that you look at and say that's a strength. And I think you're dead on,
mm-hmm.
You're dead on.
Yeah, obviously, Jack's going to count on you to shut down guys like that around the league. But one aspect of your game, I don't think is lacking. You'll come up and hit a guy. Now,
yeah.
I mean, do you like that? I mean, I would think, you know, cover guys. Most of you like to, you know, cover guys, shut them down, make the interception, whatever. But you seem to really relish the physical aspect of play too.
Yeah, it's not only about, you know, just covering the receiver. There's more to the game than that. So, you know, yeah, and on top of that, it's a physical game. And, I know that. And why shy away from it? You know, if you're in that situation, make the hit. It doesn't, you know, you shouldn't shy away from it. And I like it. You know, I'd rather give the hit than to receive it. So,
right. Did you learn that from Revis? Because I don't think Revis. Yeah, I think he's like a typical cover guy. They don't want anybody thrown in their direction. They want to shut down the whole side of things, man. I don't think you learned that that tackling technique from him, though. Yeah. Did you? So, you look at the overall talent of this roster compared to where you were last year. I know you're a rookie. You're probably just kind of wide eyed going to the National Football League, but how much better do you think this team is without having played a game yet?
I think we're a lot better. And, you know, Gus Bradley does a good job with keeping us moving in the right direction. And, you know, I think we're only going to build on it and become the team that we want to become.
All right, you were drafted last year, and you had a fellow cornerback at UConn. Wilson?
Yeah.
Bleedy Ray Wilson.
Is there any competition between you two? I mean, maybe not talked about amongst the two of you, but is there kind of maybe deep down a little bit of competition of who's going to be the better pro?
It was, you know, even at UConn, it was always something there. You know, we never said anything about it, but it was always something there with us two being the starting cornerbacks for 4 years at UConn. And, you know, you're always going to wonder who's going to be on the top, who's the top dog, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about this game, because it's always going to be competition, no matter, you know, when it is in your career. It's always going to be that competition there. So even, you know, with the NFL today, with me and Bleedy, now he has a chance to start and everything. So we've been talking about it a little bit and seeing who's going to make most plays this year, but yeah, that's always going to be there.
And in the division, you got to worry about who gets the most W's too.
Oh yeah, that's it.
That's number
that's
one.
That's a big one
on
yeah.
the list for you, Dwayne. Obviously, like every team wants to win the Super Bowl and go undefeated and all those great team things. But you know, do you have some personal goals for yourself this year? And if you do, do you want to share them? Or are they the kind of things that you just you know, maybe tack up in your locker and motivate yourself with?
My goals are pretty much probably the same as everyone else, you know, just Pro Bowl. I'll say top 10 in the league at cornerback. Win games.
Pretty
much
go.
That's it.
Respect the process, right? Because that's what Gus will tell you to do.
That's it.
how important, you know, because I've had an opportunity to talk and meet and really get to understand and to know a lot of coaches that have come through here. I have a lot of respect for your coach, Dwayne Walker.
Mm-hmm.
What's he meant to you?
He's meant a lot. Helped all of us stick to our vision to become the best that we can be and that we can become. And, you know, with only having two veterans in the back end, having him there too with that experience helps us out a lot too. So, and on top of that, he's always been there for us whenever we needed him. And that's the biggest thing. And so, yeah.
He's got a really cool demeanor.
He does.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably one of the coolest guys you'll ever meet and have a conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say he's a father figure, but he's got that calming presence when you talk to him.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Definitely does. Yeah. And it's a good thing for a player when a coach is easy to talk to. That's a big thing. Communication between coaches and the players are huge. And there, with me and D-Walk, we don't lack that. You know, I can go up there and talk to him about anything. And I mean, that's the type of thing that I'm going to need to become the best that I can become. So,
If Dwayne's talking to you on game day, I doubt you like his demeanor. You're an opposing wide receiver. It means he's probably having a good way with you. Dwayne, you know, oftentimes it's the teams that stay the healthiest that end up having the most success. So I always, you know, wish the best for you guys in that department, man. And hopefully, you know, your play gets you noticed the way you want it to. That means the Jags will probably win a lot of football games this year.
Yes, thank you.
All right, man. Dwayne Grotz in the Garber Auto Mall hot seat. First guy in the hot seat, Logman. How about that? That's our new sponsor here, Garber Auto Mall for September. Dwayne Grotz, we appreciate him stopping by and spending a little time with us here on Jaguars today. Jeff, I know you're going to get out of here a little early today. I know you got to get with Gus Bradley. I wanted to ask you were mentioning earlier about film study.
Yeah.
And how that has changed. And a guy like Dwayne Grotz is probably studying film just about every day of the week now. The technology that's available to study your opponent now, how much more prepared are today's guys than guys even when you played?
Well, it's way different. You know, when I played, we didn't have the ability to take home any film. Nowadays, you have iPads that you can take film home on it. They actually have the ability to watch game film on the cloud. So they can have literally a remote control at home plugged into their computer and operate film off of the cloud just like they were here in the building. You know, but when you're a rookie like Dwayne Grotz last year, you're not even studying the opponent. I mean, you're studying the playbook like he talked about. And so you don't even really refine your game until you get to the point where you're comfortable in the system that you're playing in. And that's why that people always talk about, well, it's year two of a system and what a difference it makes, because you're not worrying about what you're doing and you're focusing in on what the opponent is doing, because it becomes almost second nature as to far as what your job is supposed to be. And that's where you can really take your game to the next level when you're a cornerback, and especially a guy who's a technician like Dwayne Grotz. And he is, when I said that term anal, I mean, that's Dwayne Walker's term about him, is that, you know, sometimes he gets frustrated with him because he is so much of a technician. But that's what I love about Dwayne Grotz. You know, he wants to be a technician. He wants to improve his footwork. And that's how a guy who maybe does not have super elite talent can maybe become a super talented player and performance-based player.
It's interesting you brought up Bleedy Ray Wilson as well, because I remember specifically Tony and I were talking about draft prospects and the need for cornerbacks last year, and he was a guy that people had penned to the Jags or penciled in round two. And mm-hmm. as you remember, they both lasted till round three, and then when they took Grotz, I mean, that was the bigger surprise, that he actually went ahead of Bleedy Ray Wilson.
Well, but he's a better player.
And he's turned out to be, and I think as well physically fit more of the profile, and that's, again, I think, you know, Gus Bradley has certain parameters and Dave Caldwell what they're looking for certain traits, much like they went out and got Dakota Watson based on, we think these traits are going to fit into what we're going to ask of him, even though he hasn't played a lot of football. I think that same led to Dwayne Grotz being selected.
Yeah, I just hope that Dwayne stays healthy. You know, I know he had the troubles with the ankle last year, and I believe he's got the right mentality to be able to become, you know, a premium corner and to become a student of the game. You know, one of the greatest students of the game that I ever had the chance to meet and talk to was Howie Long. In fact, I saw Howie in Chicago. He was there watching his son play and talked with him after the game for a little bit. And I got to know Howie because my roommate in New York when I was with the Jets was Bill Pakel, and Bill was Howie's roommate when they were at the Raiders together. And Howie used to have a notebook that he carried with him everywhere. Games, practices, and everything. And so when he studied film, he would take intense notes on tendencies, tips, anything that he could get on the guy that he was facing, the center, the quarterback, any tips on snap count. And then after the conclusion of a game, he would write down every tip that he got in the game that maybe he didn't know. And then he had a book. He literally had a book on every individual that he would face. He had a book on the coordinator that he would face because, you know, when a quarterback comes to the line of scrimmage, here's an example. Quarterback comes to the line of scrimmage and he says, check, 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 red, 383, red, 383. What might you get from that?
What might I get from that, or what might a football player get from that?
When he says check and it's an obvious audible and he says red, red, 383.
I'm guessing he's either switching from a pass to a run or vice versa.
Okay, well, if all of a sudden that play happens and the snap count was on one, here's what I gained from that. Red, white, blue, 1, 2, 3. So I know every time he audibles at the line of scrimmage, red is
the snap
number
count's
one, is one. So red is one, red, white, blue. Red, 1, 2, 3. Okay? So you see what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, and Howie would keep that so that when a coordinator would leave from one team to go to another, he knew that any kind of audible at the line of scrimmage, it meant red. Now, if the quarterback came to the line of scrimmage and said red, 383, and it was on three, or 382, then you knew that the first number in the three-number sequence was the snap count on an audible. But that's the kind of details that you get as a player that if you end up keeping notes and learn that you can carry with you to make you better and anticipate certain plays or certain snap counts to make you better in your performance at the end of the day.
I feel like I've gotten better today listening to Jeff Loggeman. I know a lot of people out there would agree with me. We appreciate Dwayne Grotz stopping by on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat. You're going to go spend some quality time with the head coach. So we appreciate it, man. Game week.
I appreciate it.
Give me, as you leave, have you kind of crystallized what your prediction for the Jags is this year? Should we check with you later in the week?
Wins and losses?
Yeah.
I think in that, you know, that 6-8 range, I mean, 6 would be, you know, good. 8 would be fantastic. But I think in that 6-8 wins, I think probably 6 or 7. You know, but the most important thing to me is how did each game go? You know, how were they in games? You know, because for the first 8 weeks last year, this team wasn't even in games. I mean, they weren't even in competition.
Right.
You know, whereas the last 8, they were. You know, so for me, this team needs to start taking games down to the wire, and they're not going to get all of them because they're still developing, but I want to see them competitive.
Loggy, good to see you, brother.
Enjoyed it.
We'll do it again next week. Breaking down Philadelphia and Jacksonville, the aftermath, getting you ready for the Jags and the Washington Redskins. That's all coming up on Jaguars Today. Coming back, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asked you today, what kind of record do you think the Jags are going to end up with, and what place will that find them in the AFC South? We'll do that when we return. It's Jaguars Today in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios here on 1010XL. 92.5 FM. Hey folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. Dandy's got the new Anytime Deli Sandwiches going on right now, and they are just a cut above even their delicious, time-tested products that have been going here strong for nearly 60 years in Jacksonville. The Thompson family have really kicked it up a notch. Check out their Carving Station Wedge Sandwiches. USDA top round premium roast beef, sliced thin, piled high, Swiss cheese, just enough Dijon horseradish sauce and all toasted on a fresh sourdough roll. I mean, you're not going to have a better sandwich no matter where you get it. And you can get it at your local convenience store. Anytime Deli, they're sold right next to the Dandy brand name. You pop in, takes you about 2 minutes. You pick out your food, you pay for it. Lunch, you're on your way. You're not wasting it in the drive-thru. You're going to enjoy it every single time, just like you have all the Dandy creations. It's the new Anytime Deli, never frozen. So do what the label says. Enjoy a fresh anytime, every time from our friends at Dandy Foods.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, everything you need to know about your Jacksonville Jaguars. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hey, Jags fans, Coach Gus Bradley here. Nothing quite matches the excitement of leading our team onto Everbank Field, and now game day could start with you through the Everbank on the Prowl sweepstakes. For each Jags home game, one lucky fan will win tickets, pregame sideline access, and the opportunity to lead our team as they take the field. To enter and for official rules, go to everbank.com/brawl. That's everbank.com/brawl and enter today. No purchase necessary. Everbank is an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
I'm attorney David M. Graham, an insurance law advocate. People purchase insurance policies to protect them from accidents, natural disasters, and mishaps beyond their control. When a disaster turns your world upside down, you should have comfort knowing that you have an insurance policy to protect you and your family. But that's not always the case. At Graham Law PA, we will fight against the insurance companies that have denied your claim and get you the money you deserve. Call us at Graham Law PA, 567-6529, for a free consultation today. Office is Jacksonville.
Hacker here with the House of Fame MMA Report. The main event includes a couple of guys who are used to wearing championship belts. I'm back with more right after this.
Mixed Martial Arts is coming to Jacksonville Saturday, September 6th at the Veterans Memorial Arena. Jacksonville's House of Fame MMA presents 12 fights featuring former champions, rising stars, and local talent hungry for their shot at the big time. Tickets start at $38. Visit HOFMMA.com. Saturday, September 6th, House of Fame MMA debuts at the Jacksonville Veterans Memorial Arena.
The highlight of the night may well be the matchup of a couple of heavyweights. Kenneth Deuce Garner faces Matt Kovacs. Between them, they have appeared in 11 title bouts and have 22 victories. There should be plenty of firepower as well. Both fighters tip the scale at over 250 pounds. I'm Hacker with your House of Fame MMA report.
Because sports are life. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, I've paid zero attention to the music theme today. Lauren Brooks, Only the Good Die Young, Billy Joel. What do we got today?
Well, unfortunately, the music theme had something to do with our guest, who's no longer in studio.
Oh, did it?
Well, it did.
Okay, yeah. Come out Virginia, all about Virginia.
Exactly. I thought they did pretty well on Saturday. So
wait, CCR, Who Will Stop the Rain?
Says Virginia in the lyrics.
Oh, please.
How?
Jason Mraz.
He's
did
from
you
Virginia.
Get my message.
He's from.
Like anyone knows that.
Oh my goodness.
Stop it.
I liked my music theme today. I worked very hard on it, and it was all a moot point in the end.
It was. We appreciate the hard work that you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you put more hard work into, your music theme or your preparation for the fantasy draft last night?
Ooh, I'm going to have to say the music theme. The fantasy draft, because it was my second one, I felt confident, and also my friend Dan helped me. So that
was a show and go situation for you last night. I got it.
I have never been a part of a draft that went that fast in my life.
That was awesome.
It was great. We got the whole thing done in under an hour last night, everybody. And thanks for everybody for participating. I know you guys got another one with the show tonight. And
yes.
Hopefully it goes just as swiftly as last night's did. But I didn't hear a peep from Lauren in the chat in the draft room. And I was like, is she really here? Like, I was like, because I would expect her to say hello.
Right.
I didn't even know there was a chat. I'm sorry. I was also watching Miami at Louisville. So
yeah.
I was
talking all night long.
I apparently missed the memo for that. All I knew was the draft was starting. I was locked in, ready to go, and firing furiously with my picks.
Today, we asked you to weigh in the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight on what the Jags' final record will be, what kind of season they're going to have, and where they're going to finish in the AFC South. Tony, give us a sampling of what we received.
Here's what we got on Twitter from Stevie at Irish Jaguar. He said 6-10 tied for second. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Cam, 7-9 tied for second place. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Eric, 7-9 final record, third in the AFC South, just behind Houston at 8-8. Hashtag boo. Hashtag game week. Hashtag Jaguars today. From the Jags, we got 7-9, second in the division behind the hated Colts. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag start Bortles, and their record will be better. Hashtag 5 days to go. And from Peter, we got, after a 1-6 start with Henny, B2 bombs the Browns on 10-10. Jags win four more, finish 6-10, and the fans go crazy. Hashtag Jaguars today.
Let's see, what else do we get here? I got 3-3. I think Alan Wynn thought I was looking for their AFC South record. I hope.
Sounds like it.
3-3 tied for second with Tennessee.
They do play a few more than six.
Brian Saldino, the long-suffering fan base, will have to suffer another terrible year from the running game going nowhere to Chad Henne, still the Jags quarterback. Defense will be improved, but you got to score to win games. 4-12 again. Hope the team thinks waiting on Bortles is worth losing all the positive momentum they built this offseason. Joshua Whitmire has the Jags 11-5 winning the AFC South, which is nice.
That's a believer right there.
Yes, why not? Jags will be very competitive, says Cass Bridges, with that stout defense. Move the ball enough to squeeze out a 10-6 wild card season. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag do your job. And on it goes. We'll make our official predictions later in the week. But I'm with Jeff. I mean, somewhere, we'll give you an exact number, but somewhere in that 6-8 range, I think, is the range for them this year. And anything below that, it's going to be disappointing. I mean, 6 wins can be disappointing depending on, you know, if you lose a bunch of fourth quarter leads and, you know, you have a, if you're 6-6 in the midst of the wild card chase and you lose your last couple and whatever the case may be. But I think, you know, any 8-8 or anything above would be a pretty big leap for this franchise. And then you'd feel going into next year, now's the time, right? I mean, you're going to have Bortles. You're going to have a lot of these young players,
sure,
hopefully, you know, coming together and maturing at the same time. But
I hate to sound like a broken record. I mean, look, I agree with you guys. I think the defense is good enough on this team that they're an 8-9 win caliber defense for the Jags. I think the offense, with all of the questions about the offensive line and the young weapons that they have in this at the skill positions and questions about Toby Gerhart being the man for the first time and Chad Henne is your starting quarterback, I think the defense is good enough to win 8 or 9 games. I think in the end they probably wind up 6-10, 7-9 when everything is said and done. And by the way, before we get out of here, a quick note, Marcell Jensen has officially been signed to the practice squad, so all 10 spots on that have been filled by the team. That's according to John Osier on Twitter, who will be with us a little bit later this week.
He just makes the show that much better.
I know. As
Johnny
we,
O,
we
working
get you
hard
prepared
for the show.
For game day.
Yes. I think he took offense to your tweet. What did your tweet say last night?
I said that I'm excited for our first week on Jaguars today. That's a game week. Nobody will have you more ready for the Eagles than us here on Jaguars today.
Did he assume he meant, like, we meant today's show?
I don't know.
Because it was an Osier free zone for
but
the most part.
He responded to me, nobody, and I was like, I choose my words carefully, and I do believe you're part of the
he's
week.
He's part of the, yeah, the program. He's one of the hosts of the program. I don't understand what the issue is with Mr. Ozone, but that's the way the senior writer rolls sometimes. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships and at Tom Bush BMW. They've got the Certified Edge sales event going on for the remainder of September. You can enjoy 1.9% APR and up to $1,500 credit on many 2011 and 2012 certified pre-owned BMW. So check that out at Tom Bush BMW and check out the rest of the family of dealerships, including Tom Bush Mini, Tom Bush Mazda, and Tom Bush Volkswagen as well, online at TomBush.com. Thanks to Dwayne Grotz for stopping by. First time we've had him first time we've had anyone in the Garber Auto Mall hot seat, which is nice. That's the new seat. It was actually Tony's seat.
A little warm.
A little warm now?
Yep.
A little toasty. All right. tomorrow we may have Messrs. O'Halloran and Long at various times tomorrow.
Cool.
We'll just have to find out because it's the greatest week of radio that's ever happened. It's off to a good start. You always learn a lot.
Man, I learned a ton. And even like on the break, he was explaining to me the different types of cover two.
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
Tony's getting some notes for his film watching.
I'm going to school, buddy.
Post game film watching. And Tony will report back to us on Monday after watching the All 22 on NFL.com. He'll break it down. Maybe that's what your niche is going to be. You're going to be one of those, you know, self-styled NFL scouts.
As I told Jeff, because he's going to be in here with us every Tuesday throughout the season, and obviously he does a great job breaking it down for us and for the fans out there so that they have an understanding of what happened within these games and getting ready for the next weekend's game. And look, this is the first time I've ever tried to do anything like this, watch any kind of tape, film, especially the coaches' tape. And I was like, I'm curious on Tuesdays when you come in to find out just how wrong I'm looking at the game. Like, just how differently he sees it than I do.
Right.
And despite the fact that we're watching the same film, yeah, like I said, I'll be going to school every week, and hopefully he takes us there as he has throughout the offseason.
Class in session with Jeff Loggeman every Tuesday on Jaguars Today. That does it for us today, but we'll be back tomorrow, man. 2 days from the start of the NFL season.
Oh, yeah.
So excited about that. Got our final 1010XL fantasy draft tonight. Let's see, Donna Murphy, Andrew Gibson, J.P. Shadrick's in that one.
Oh,
with
nice.
Myself and Josh Carney and one of our defending champs from last year and a half dozen new faces as well. So we'll do that tonight. I doubt we'll top the 51-minute mark, which that was spectacular.
Sweet.
Drafting by folks last night. But that'll be league number 17 for me, Tony. I think I'm ready to cap it, but I'm leaving myself open for one last invite for Wednesday night.
I'm at 10.
10?
And I'm not looking for another invite. That's enough.
I always, you know, I get to this point, I'm like, this could go for one more draft. And then it's like, I didn't really need to manage one more team. But
nope.
That's the way it goes. All right, that does it for us. For Lauren Brooks, for Joe Fortunato, for Jeff Loggeman, thanks to Dwayne Grotz. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll talk to the boys of XL Primetime next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.